Now, we're holding on Chof Dalet Amud Beis by the Mishnah. Continuing with these Mishnayos that are in the form of what applies to one doesn't apply to the other and vice versa. So the Mishnah says, Tamar b'klei cheres, tamar b'chol ha-kelim. The case involving klei cheres, earthenware kelim, where they would become tamay, where they would be, remain tamar, is tumah when it comes to other types of kelim made of other materials, namely if the source of tumah touches the outside of a kelim. Klei cheres amatame only from the inside, and as we're going to go on to say, even the inside, even if the tumah doesn't actually touch them, even if it's only hanging in their airspace or something, but from the outside, klei cheres are not able to become tumah, as we're going to derive in the Gemara how we know them. On the other hand, other kelim will become tameh when the tumah touches them on the outside. Tohar b'chol kelim, tameh b'klei cheres, and vice versa. The case that's tohar by other kinds of kelim will be tameh by klei cheres, namely if the tumah goes inside them without touching them, other types of kelim will be tohar. As long as the tumah didn't touch them, the klei cheres will become tameh in that case. Again, this is, you know, like we had the first couple of Mishnayos of this series, we had where there's an absolute disjoint between them. There's no case which is kosher by both or possible by both, whereas some of the other ones we said there's a little bit of overlap. Here also, you know, if tumah goes into the cave and touches it on the inside, either way, klei cheres or any other ones will be tumah. All we mean is, in other words, there are cases where one type will become tumah and not the other. So the Gemara says, "Tanan Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, Aver Kli Cheres, if something went into the airspace of a Kli Cheres, Tomei, then the Kali becomes Tomei, the Gabai Tohar. However, on the other hand, if the Tumah touched the outside of the Kali, then it will be, then it will be Tohar. Tosfos points out, by the way, you shouldn't think that what it means is the gabay tohar, that if it became tomei from the inside, that the outside will remain tohar. It's not so. If the tumah touches or is located in the airspace of it on the inside, the outside of it will indeed become tomei as well. Tosfos then discusses a little bit an interesting point. What about a handle of a keli? The handle, of course, is attached to the outside of the keli, and we're going to learn later on in the Masechta, we're going to have a whole section of a perek that talks about dinim of tumah v'tara, as far as foods and as far as things attached to foods and attached to kelim. So Tosfos says that actually, the handle wouldn't transmit tumah to it either, meaning that if the tumah touched the handle, then the keli as a whole wouldn't become tumah. On the other hand, there are other rishonim who disagree with that and say that in fact it would become tumah. As a kol kelim, on the other hand, when it comes to the airspace of other kinds of kelim, tahar, then it will also, Tosfos points out one more thing. There is a case where a kli cheres can become tamei with tumah touching it from the outside, namely a case called heset, where a zog moves the keli, even if he doesn't actually move it with his bare hands. He's just, for example, holding a stick and then moves something with it. Then there's psukim that tell us that nevertheless the thing is tamei. So there you have a rare case where a kli cheres is able to become tamei from the outside, but other than that, not. But then, on the other hand, continues the Braisa, Avra Kolak Kelim Tohar, on the other hand, with all other kinds of Kelim, if the Tumah is inside them and doesn't actually touch them, then they remain Tohar, the Gabon Tomei. On the other hand, if Tumah touches the outside of the Kelim, then they'll be Tomei. Nimsa, so it comes out, as we said in the Mishnah, Tohar B'Klei Cheres, Tomei B'Kolak Kelim, the case with Klei Cheres that will remain Tohar, then with other Kelim, the parallel case where the Tumah was in the inside of it, will become Tomei, Tohar B'Kolak Kelim, Tomei B'Klei Cheres, and that what was what's tohar by all the kelim, where it touches the outside, where it's in, like, on the inside of it, tomei b'klei cheres, then the klei cheres that will become tomei. Now, there is an interesting vort on it that I think comes from the Kotzker that says a person is compared to a klei cheres. In fact, in halacha, in these halachas of what's able to become tomei from what, in many cases we say that a person and klei cheres have the same status as far as what can be metame them and what not. And a person also is outside, his body is not really the important thing. With a klei cheres, the idea is, in other words, the actual material it's made out of is very cheap stuff. Earthenware is all used as a symbol of, like, something virtually worthless. The only thing that makes it worthwhile is that it's Kaylee, is that it has an interior. And the same thing, a person, his body is not really worth much. You know, the popular expression they always say is, we would take the chemicals that make up the human body and sell them as chemicals, it would be worth them a couple of bucks maximum. But what makes a person important is his inside, his neshama, his capacity for Torah and Avodah and Mus Chasadim. So therefore, in the same way, then, a person has to be careful to prevent chumah from touching his inside, from affecting his core, his neshama, his seichel, all that. So it must be Menahani Mili. Where do we know this from, this distinction between other kinds of kelim and kleichets? So the Tana Rabbanan, we learn in a Braisa, now when the Pasuk mentions about Klecheres being able to become tame, the expression in the pasuk is kol ashiyutel mehem el toichoi, anything that falls of them in chol klecheres. The pasuk says the chol klecheres, any udenware kedi. The pasuk says ashiyutel mehem el toichoi, where one of them, namely the pasuk is talking about dead sheres, but it means any other source of tumah as well that falls into the inside of it. Kol ashiyutel yitma, everything that is inside the kedi will become tame. But also sishvodu, when you have to break the kedi because klecheres, you can't be metaher in a mikveh. So the pasuk says toichoi. When the pasuk says inside it, that means va'afabi shalom noga. That means even if the tumah doesn't actually touch the inside of it, just the fact that the tumah was located in the airspace of the cave. So va'afabi shalom noga. So even if it didn't touch. After Imafli Shle Noga, so you're saying even if it didn't touch, or in Elin King Noga, how do you know? Maybe it means only if the tumor falls into it and actually touches it and lands on the bottom or something. How do you know that even if suppose for example you were to take a piece of dead sheretz and suspend it on a string and hang it in the airspace of a klicheres, how do we know that the klicheres would nevertheless become tummy? Tosus points out that continuing in the Gemara, we're going to mention various psukim that show us that clay cheres are different in that regard. They become tummy from the inside, but the fact is we don't know all of that yet. We're still trying to work all that out. Yunus and Benav Thomas Omer. So to answer the question, says Rabbi Yechon Benav Thomas, we can answer that we have a Xerah Shavah. Nematoicha letameh and nematoicha litameh. In the same pasuk, you have twice where it says toichoi. Where it says that if the tumor falls in, first the Torah says toichai, well not first, that's out of order, but the Torah mentions toichai as far as being the tamei other things. Namely, the Torah continues, anything that is inside the keli, and meaning any food that is inside the keli, will become tamei. The nema toichai will be tamei, and then earlier in the pasuk you have the word toichai as far as the keli itself becoming tamei. So we have a comparison. Zereshava. Ma toichai ha'omer di tamei achvish le'noga. Now when it comes to toichai, to make other things tamei, even if the keli doesn't directly touch the food, nevertheless the food will become tamei, as the Gemara is going to go on to point out, that even if the food, even if, for example, you have a food made up of many different particles, only some of which are touching the sides of the keli. Nevertheless, all of it becomes tamei. So therefore, says Rabbi Yonasan, af toichai amoli tamei af bishlei noga. The same way when we talk about toichai, that the keli becomes tamei when the tumor is in its airspace, means even if it didn't actually touch the walls of the keli. Okay, the hosam and nolan. Well, then, where in turn? Do we know that with the food that's in the keli, it becomes tamei, even if it's not touching the actual keli? Amar Rav Yonasan. So Rav Yonasan says, the Pashtus of Rav Yonasan is a different one than Rav Yonasan that I've told us before, but in any case, he says, because when the Torah is saying everything that is in the keli becomes tamei, thereby the Torah is testifying about even if the keli were to be full of mustard seeds. Now mustard seeds you're going to have, if you have a keli full of those, they're tiny little seeds, so they're only some of them are going to be touching the inside walls of the keli. The rest of them are not. And nevertheless, you still see that all of them, the Torah says, Kola Shabbaseh Yitma, all of what's in it becomes Tame, implying even the ones that are in the middle. Now, Rashi points out, what's the problem? Why don't we say the ones that are touching the walls become Tame from the Kavi, and then they touch the one, then they're touching the ones next to them, and those become Tame, and so on and so forth. Rashi points out, first of all, a couple of things. First of all, each one of them is not a Kadeta. For food to be Matame, other food is not, you need at least a kaveta of it. And here you wouldn't have, you would need the individual ones that are touching the walls of the keli are in each one of them by itself is not a kaveta, because mustard seeds are very small. Also, Rashi points out, one food cannot be metame of food beyond a certain point. Actually, midaraisa food is not metame food anyway. Midaraisa food can be metame liquids, and liquids can be metame food, but for food to be metame food, a rishon to make a sheni, for example, that particular detail is the rabbanim. And then on top of that, also, then what you would have is, when it comes to Chulin anyway, you only go as far as Sheni. When it comes to Truma, Shlishi, when it comes to Kodshim Revi, if you were to say like that, the ones that are touching the walls become a Rishon, and the ones they touch become a Sheni, and so forth, you would stop very soon. You still wouldn't have that all of them would be Tomei. So for all those reasons, therefore, we have to say, if Torah is telling you that all of them are Tomei, means all of them are on an equal level, whether they're touching the walls of the Kevi or not. Tosfos points out now another thing. There is a machlokas Rashi and Tosfos in several places, and there's a machlokas between Rashi and Tosfos and the Rambam in several places in Shas. We know that food to be metame, other food, you need a kabetzi, you know, an egg size of it. What about for the food to become tame in the first place? Will any small amount become tame, or do you need a kabetzi to become tame as well? Tosfos points out that a bit of time in particular holds that no, your food will not become tame unless you have a kabetza of it. Well, therefore, so here we don't even need to be talking about mustard seeds, even if it was full of eggs. The same thing. In other words, the original eggs that are touching the sides would become tame, but still, as it actually had explained, you still wouldn't have that all of them end up becoming tame. So that demonstrates that everything that's in the keli, the fact that everything in the keli becomes tamei, therefore means even if it's not touching, so it's not a matter even of rishon and sheni and all of that, it's a matter of that everything that's in a kli chedes that becomes tamei, and therefore now we can use that zera shava that Rav Yonasan ben Abtolmos said before to say therefore the same thing is true as far as the keli becoming tamei, that the truma doesn't actually have to touch it, it's enough that it was in its airspace. So the Shittim Kubetzis points out actually that Rashi originally held that food can be makabel tumah, even daraisa, even a small amount, and only later on though, Rashi changed his mind and agreed with Rabbeinu Tam's position that it will become tumah only if you have a kabetza. Now that's daraisa. On a derabanan level, food can become tumah less than that. The Rambam holds like Rashi's original opinion and says that food can become tumah any amount, it's only through metame others that you need a kabetza. So in any case, therefore, so we see that all the food that's in there becomes the same degree of tumah, and that in turn, we have a zera shava from that the same thing is true as far as the tumah inside the keli, even if it's not touching it. Okay. Well, the Gemara says, Amalei Rav Abba ba'Ava l'Rava, v'yehei kli cheres mitamei megabe b'kav ha'chomer. Well, here we're saying all this time that a kli cheres is only mitamei from the inside, but maybe in fact we should say a kav ha'chomer to say that it should be like other kelim as well, and able to become tamei from its sides as well. We would make a kavachomer, makol akelim she'im mitamin ma'aviron, madach other kinds of kelim which are not mitamin from their airspace, mitamin migabon, and yet they are tamei if the tumah touches the outside of them. And Rashi points out that we know because the pasuk in connection with that matter of shrutzim and kelim, it says v'chol ashiyipro olav, anything that there falls on it. So when the tumah falls on the keli itself, doesn't matter whether the inside or the outside. So other kinds of keli, it's clear, become tumah from their outsides, even though they're not tumah from their insides. Kli cheres from mitamei ma'avira ein adin sheyitamei megabe. Well, then kli cheres, which is mitamei even from its inside, how much more so it should be mitamei from the outside as well. So kli cheres should have the rules of a regular keli plus on top of it the special rules of a kli cheres. How do we know that not? Now Tosfos points out we could slug up that kav ha'chomer because we could say other kelim are able to become abba and abba tuma. Meaning the difference between an abba tuma and a vlada tuma, we talk about the zavi avos tuma, abba tuma, then we talk about rishon sheni, etc. The basic difference is an abba tuma is able to be metame anything, people, kelim, foods or drinks, as opposed to a vlada tuma is only able to be metame food and drinks. Now, other kelim are able to become an ava tumah, meaning exactly that. For example, the keli itself becomes an ava tumah in various ways. For example, by being in contact with a mess, or by a zov touching it, etc. So it becomes an ava tumah. Now, the food that is inside it if it touches food, then that food will become a rishon l'tumah. As opposed to a kli sheres, never becomes an ava tumah. Whatever tumah touches it, it becomes a rishon l'tumah. So you could say other kelim therefore have that stringency that they can become an ava tumah. A kli sheres cannot. Tosfos answers that we're not talking about so much the keli, we're talking about the inside versus the outside. Tosfos discusses there's more reasons why the Gemara thought that this is a valid kavachomer. In any case, the point is that we should argue then that we should say all kelim that clay sheres should be like all other kelim, able to become tummy from the inside or from the outside. So the answer is amakra, because the pasuk says v'chir kli fasua hasher in somid pasul olam. The pasuk says when it talks about an oil mess, when it talks about kelim that are inside the same building or under the same roof or whatever as a mess, and the pasuk says v'chir kli fasua, any open kelim hasher in somid pasul olam where there's no tightly attached cover on top of it. So then the pasuk says that it and its contents are metame. Now, Ezel Klisha to Mosek, Kademus Lepisai. Now, what kind of keli do you have where the tumah comes before the opening of it? In other words, that the tumah doesn't even need to touch it in order to become tumah. Just the fact that the tumah is in the same area is able to become tumah through the opening. In other words, Rashi teaches out she gila torah as a tumah lahashkim on the maher v'lobe derech pisrei. So to speak, the Torah makes it that the tumah is able to be very eager and very quick on the draw and come into its entrance and right away be in the time of the keli even before it touches it. Well, as we said before, heveyem is a kli sheres. Necessarily, this is a kli sheres because the kli sheres is the only one where it says on el torichay into the inside of it. And the implication of the pasuk is. Now, we're saying because there's no tumid posel, because there's no tightly attached cover on it, then therefore it and its contents become tumid. For your tumid posel olav, implying that if there is a tumid posel on it, if its cover is tightly attached to its opening, tumid. So then it's tahor. So therefore, it's now if a kli sheres was able to become tameh from the outside, what good would some apostle do? The fact is, you'd still have the truma. Everything that's in an oil mess is considered as though it was touched directly by the oil mess. In other words, we don't say. In other words, like we said, that we wouldn't say. In other words, you have the mess, and then you have the air, and then you have from the air the kelim amatame, and it's a lesser degree of tumah. We say that when you have something that's in the same building or under the same roof or whatever as a mess, the entire thing, the entire area, is considered as though it was filled up with tumas mess, and therefore it's considered to be touching the kelim directly. And nevertheless, we say that if the kli sheres was tightly covered, then it wouldn't become tumah. Showing, therefore, that a kli sheres is impossible for it to become tumah from its outside. So as long as it's covered, as long as it's sealed, then the tumah won't penetrate into the inside of it. So that's that. So that takes away that kavachomer. Okay, the Gemara asks the other way around. Let's make a kavachomer the other way around and say that other kinds of kelim are able to become tumah from their airspace. And we would make the kavachomer. We make the kavachomer the other way around. Ma'adaf a kli sheres which cannot become tummy from its outside, as we just finished saying, as we learned from the pasuk, mitami me'avira, and yet it becomes tummy from its airspace. Kol ha'kelim shemitami me'gamon. So then, other kelim of other materials that are able to become tummy from their outside, ein yadin shemitami me'avira. How much more so that they should be able to become tummy from their inside. Again, here's where the Postus points out that there is a chumra in clay sheres over other kelim. A kli sheres can't become tahor in a mikveh. Other kinds of kelim can. So again, here's where Tosfos gives the various answers of what the mechanism is of the kavachomer that the Gemara is using over here. In any case, so why don't we say that? So the answer is amakra toichoi, because the pasuk says that if something falls into its inside. So we have therefore toichoi, that's a mute. Toichoi shall zet, but like toichoi shall achar. It means only the inside of a kli sheres, not the inside of another kind of keli. So therefore we see from that other kinds of kelim are not able to become tomei from their inside, only from their outside. Okay, Tosos points out, if we were to say this Kal v'Chomer, another point as well, then we would say that actually we would say that then we would say that maybe they wouldn't be able to become Tomei, then they'd become Tomei only from their inside and not from the outside, and then they'd be like Klei Cheres, but okay, we would say maybe not. Then we would say Klei Cheres, it clearly says Tumas Aver, then we would say that it's Tomei only from the inside. Okay, then we would say maybe on the Tomei inside or outside. But again, the answer is when it says Toichoi, means no, means only the Toich of a Klei Cheres, not any other kind of Kali. Okay. However, the Gemara asks, "V'hani toichei hodarshinu." What do you mean, though? The fact that it says toichei, we already doubted then. We already said before. Rabbi Yonis and the Naturalist gave us a Kal v'Chomer from the word toichei twice in that pasuk. That we learned from that that just like the food doesn't have to be touching the keli to become tamei, the same way the tumah doesn't have to be touching the keli to make it tamei. So how are you now? How are you, Rabbi Abba Abba, now using the word toichei in the pasuk to also tell us to be memai other kinds of kaven? And the answer is I brought toichik simply because in effect it says four times toichai. Because the Torah didn't, each time it says toichai and each one it could have said toich. So therefore in effect you have two times where it says toich and two times where it says toichai, and we can douch in all four of them. So toich. Each time it says toichai and could have said toich, so therefore that gives us four things to work with. One of them tells us the actual din, the fact that Klei Cheres on the Tameh from their inside, which we wouldn't have known without the Torah telling us. The second one is for the Gzeirah Shavah that Rabbi Yonis and Minas Tormos said before. So now that gives us one that's available for that gives us one that's available for the Gzeirah Shavah. Now you have a point that's mentioned in a point that's mentioned in various places in Shas that a Gzeirah Shavah has to be, according to different opinions, has to be mufne. You have to have the word is available and unused in the pasuk for anything else. So here Tosfos points out it didn't even have to say the word Torah at all. It could have said anything that falls into it, then anything that's in it. Anything that's in it becomes Tomei. It didn't have to say Tomei inside it. Therefore, we have the word available for Gzeirah Shavah. The Chad, then the third one teaches us, as Rav Adab Abba said, Toichei Shozev Alei Toichei Shalacher, that only the inside of a Kli Cheres is able to become Tomei in that way, not the other Kelim do not become Tomei from their insides, like we were saying. So that answers our question with the Kal v'Chomer before, because the Torah tells us Toichei, they tell us that only Kli Cheres are Tomei from the inside. And the fourth one, Bechad, means Toichei V'Lo Toich Toichei. The fourth one tells us that only what's inside the Keli directly, not what's inside something that's inside something else inside the Keli. Namely, suppose you have a Kli Cheres, and then you have inside it, partially inside it, is another Keli. And the rim of the inside Keli sticks up above the outer Keli. So now, in other words, so the inner Keli is not completely inside the is not completely inside the outer one. Now, if you have foods or drinks inside the inner Keli, then they will not become Tomei. In effect, the Keli that they're in blocks the Truma of the inside of the place of the Kli Cheres from being the Tomei then, because then it's not Toichei, it's what's called Toich Toichei. It's the inside of the inside, namely it's inside a Keli, which is inside another one. So therefore it will not be able to become Tomei. In fact, by the way, the same din works the other way around. If let's say you have Mishnayos and Kalim that talk about this kind of thing. If you have Truma inside the inner Kali, and again the rim of the inner Kali sticks up above the outer one, even if they're all Klei Cheres, only the inner one will become Tomei, the outer one will not. So we learn that toichei, only what's inside the keli directly, not what's inside something which is inside something else. V'afilu klei shetef matzu. And in fact, even if the inner keli is made out of material which is non-earthenware material, klei shetef, Rashi literally means kelim that can be washed. Rashi explains that's the nickname for all other kelim other than klei cheres, because they can all be dipped in a mikveh and made tahor, so therefore we call them klei shetef. So even Klei Shetef will save in this kind of case. Meaning, let's say, for example, you have a wooden Keli, or a metal Keli, as we're going to talk about in the next Mishnah. If you have a wooden or metal Keli, which has food in it, and that wooden or metal Keli is inside the Klei Cheres, but again, not completely inside, but rather part of it sticks out above, then it will save the food that's inside it from becoming Tomei. So Rashi also points out the keli itself will not become tame, even though it's in a kli cheres, because this rule of the inside of a kli cheres being a tame other things applies only to foods and drinks. It does not apply to keli. Keli will not become tame from a kli cheres. So in other words, if you have a kli cheres and you have a different kind of keli inside it, the inner keli will not become tame. And he was saying that if that inner keli is partially sticking out of the outer one, then even the food and drink that's inside it will remain tahor and will be saved from tahor. Tosfos actually discusses, it actually is saying that what it means is that even clay shetach, the point is that even these clay shetach are able to become tomei from their outside, from tumma touching their outside. Nevertheless, we don't take that into consideration over here, because again, the clay shetach themselves are not metame from the airspace of a clay fence. Tosfos has some difficulties with Rashi's explanation on that, and why we mention even clay shetach is really no chiddush over there. So Tosfos says what it means is that in other words, the idea would be if it was one kli cheres inside another, then sure, we would say the inner one blocks the outer one, because after all they're the same min. But when you have it's a different min, you would think that maybe it doesn't block the tumah from reaching the food, and nevertheless we're saying that even so it does. So that's what we learned from the fourth toichoy in the pasuk. So again, we can learn the gzeira shava like we did on chavad alar and beis. Rabbi Yonis and Rav Thomas is gzeira shava. But in addition, we can also learn the point that we don't have a kalachomer to say that other kalim should be able to become tamei from the inside because the pasuk says toichoy. So that's that. Okay. So now the Gemara says, here's another question. So now let's ask another question, though. How about we should figure out logically, and we should say that other kelim are not able to become tame from their outside, only from their inside, and doubt if the tumah touched them. In other words, we should say, maybe there's no concept of any keli able to become tame from the outside. Maybe kelim can become tame only from the inside. You said before, the pasuk says toichoy about klei cheres, meaning that klei cheres are unique. Fine, a klei cheres can become tame when the tumah is in its airspace without touching it. Maybe other kelim, you require that the tumah should actually touch the inside of them in order to be able to become tame. And again, the kal v'chomer, which is metame from its air space, but it's not metame from its outside. Some other kelim which are not metame from their air space, maybe they should be metame, not they should not be metame from their outside either. So fine, the tumah has to touch them, but we would say that it means, in other words, it's not enough that the tumah touches the outside of them, it would have to be that the tumah actually touches the inside of them for them to become tame. And the answer is, omakura, because the pasuk says, again, let's go back to that pasuk about the keli, the open keli that was in an oyel hames, where it says if it doesn't have a tightly fitted, sealed on cover, then it becomes tame. So again, if it has a tumid pasuk, then it's tahor. Now, we said before that this pasuk is talking dafka about klei cheres. So, because we said before, it applies only to the kind of keli where if it was open, then it would become tame. Tumase kademas lepistoi, as we said before, where the tumah is able to get into the inside and be metame it even before it actually touches it. So now, then the pasuk says, if it doesn't have its summit posel, then it's tame. And that's specifically klei cheres. Hai hu defiein summit posel all of tame. Only klei cheres do we say this rule that if there's no summit posel, then it's tame, ho yash summit posel all of tahar, implying that if it has that tightly fitted cover, it would remain tahar. But that's only klei cheres, ho kola kelim. Therefore, the implication is that other kelim, ben she yash summit posel aleim, ben she yash summit posel aleim, mitamin, whether there's summit posel or not, they will become tame. Why? Because the tumah affects them from the outside. And once they're in an oil mess, again, we consider as though the entire room was full of tumah, and therefore the tumah touches the outside of the keli and makes it tame, and a summit posel doesn't do any good. Summit posel will do good only for klei cheres, because they can become tame from the inside. So the bottom line is, we're left with what we said in the Mishnah, that only Kli Cheres can become Tomei from the inside and not from the outside, and then even if the Tumah doesn't touch it, other Kalim will become Tomei from the inside if the Tumah touches them on the inside, or from the outside if the Tumah touches them there, but not from the inside if the Tumah is just suspended inside them. Okay. Next Mishnah, also of this form of what applies to one does not apply to the other. The Mishnah says, Torah b'chle, tomei b'chle matzos. The case where keli would be makabel tumah of a wooden keli, such a thing would be tomei if the equivalent was a metal keli. Namely, we're talking about flat keli, as we're going to learn in the Gemara. So a flat wooden keli, let's say, for example, a tabletop or something like that, is not makabel tumah. Sometimes certain such things are makabel tumah d'rabbanan. Primarily, we're talking about on a daraisa level of the year. Daraisa, at least a wooden keli has to have a kli kibul, has to have some kind of receptacle in order to be able to become tamei. On the other hand, by clay matzos, by metal kelim, it doesn't matter. A flat metal sheet would be makabel tumah. Torah b'klei machas, tamei b'klei eitz, and vice versa, though, a case with metal kelim, which is not makabel tumah yet, namely, when it's not finished, when it's incompletely finished, then it's not makabel tumah, tamei b'klei eitz, but such a thing would become tamei if it was a wooden kelim, because by wooden kelim, we don't care whether they were finished or not, as long as they're functional. one idea being, in other words, a logical reason behind it is that metal kelim are... you make a metal keli so that it should look nice, so therefore you want to have that it should have to be finished and then have it look at the best, as opposed to a wooden keli, as more people make wooden kelim more for functional uses, and therefore you don't care so much whether it looks beautiful or not. So that's a balabatasha reason for it, but as we're going to see in the Gemara, we're going to learn it from Silken. Actually, we're not really going to learn it from Silkim. It really is that logic that clay matzahs are meant to look nice and finished as opposed to clay eights are dysfunctional. So the Gemara says, Tanan Banan, Gomei clay eights, clay eights that are incomplete, they're functional at this point, but they're not finished yet. They haven't yet sanded them or polished them or whatever you would usually do with them. The word golem basically means something unfinished. We have, for example, the famous golem of Prague and other golemim in Jewish history. It's called that because they're made from clay. They're made from clods of dirt. And in a sense, they're incomplete because a complete human being has all their faculties. A golem in particular is not able to speak, as we know from all the various golem stories. So, but the basic meaning of golem is something unfinished, something functional but unfinished. Anyway, so Gomer Klei Eitz Tmeim, such things are still makabel tumah because they're called a keli. Shutehen Tahoren, on the other hand, though, a flat wooden keli would be tahor, would not be makabel tumah. The reason behind that is, it actually explains based on various Gemaras, because where do we know b'chval that wooden kelim can become tomei? We learn that there's a hekesh between them and a sack. The pasuk mentions in that section, where we were talking before about the pesukim about klei cheres and shrutzim and all that, where the pasuk says, mikol kli eitz oveged oisok. Any kind of wooden kelim or clothing or leather or sack, then all of them are able to be makabel tumah. So we learn from that, therefore, a sack is something that has a receptacle, that has an inside, and you can carry it around, either empty or full. So therefore, we learn that all these other things as well, in order for them to be makabel tumah, they have to, in particular, wooden kelim, they have to have a receptacle, they have to be able to contain something within them, and they have to, and they have to be able to be carried empty and full, which is a different din. We're not really discussing this point over here, but you have a din that's mentioned in other places in Shas, namely that clay eats above a midah. We have it in the Mishnayos that we learned for Yortzeit and for the 11 months, for example. We have above a midah, a keli that's so large it holds 40 saw. 40 saw liquid or 60 saw dry, then it's considered you wouldn't be able to carry such a thing, whether it's full or empty, because when you try to carry it, if you try to move it around, when it's full, it'll break. Therefore, such a keli is not makabel tumah. That also we learn from the comparison with a sack. So as long as a wooden keli has a clear kibble, then it's makabel tumah, but if not, then it's not makabel tumah. Domi, Flamath has Sahurin, on the other hand, unfinished metal kalim are remaining Tahor and they're not Makabal Tum. On the other hand, flat metal kalim are able to be Makabal Tum. Again, as the Gemara is going to point out soon, the reason is the Gemara is going to use the expression horrible or covered as suyin because metal kalim are made for covering, so you want them to look finished and nice. Nimsa, so therefore the Braisa says, as it comes out, as we said in our Mishnah, Torah b'chlei eitz, tamei b'chlei machlis, the cases with wooden kalim that would remain tahor, then the parallel with them is clay matchas would become tamei, namely flat ones, tahor the clay matchas, tamei the clay eights, and what's tahor by metal kalim, if they're unfinished, would be tamei by wooden kalim, as long as they're functional. So the Braisa continues, the Elohim gromi clay eights, what do we mean by unfinished wooden kalim? Kol she'osid loshuf, if he still has yet to sand down the kalim. So Rashi describes in his times they would use a certain kind of grass for that. That basically a rough kind of grass that they could use it as the equivalent of sandpaper, basically. So if he plans to put in nails or little frames or little decorations. Rashi describes, yeah, for example, chests that women would use for their clothing or for whatever they use. They would often decorate them with studs or nails or things like that. So that kind of thing. So he hasn't finished that yet. Or the garter, or he plans to plane it. Planing is also to smooth out, to smoothen, to remove some wood from the surface, but again, he has yet to do that. Or the tower cave, he plans to make round decorations in it, where he's gonna carve into the surface of it, he's gonna do round designs in it. Rashi describes that he'd sometimes do this kind of thing, for example, for the lids of chests. And for benches, they would make like nowadays. Also, you can find wooden kalim that have like round holes in them and things like that, where they carve or they use a router or something to carve out decorations into below the surface. So all those again, then the kalim is not finished yet without that. If he plans to do that, or vahatiach betunas. Another possibility is that he still has yet to smooth it with tunas. Tunas may be the same as tuna, but the point is, in other words, it's some kind of fish that has a rough skin, and again they would use it for sanding down something to make it smooth. Tosfos points out that there's a different Gemara that mentions ur hadog, that mentions the skin of a fish in general, whereas here we're talking about specifically tunas. So what is it? Can you use in general fish skin for this or not? So Tosfos points out there can be a kind of like rough versus fine sandpaper. The kind we're talking about over there is you want to remove the splinters. You want to be able to have it, for example, to be a nice smooth chair or bench that you sit on it and don't get splinters. For that, any kind of fish skin will be good. Then you have here we're talking about to make it polished and nice. For that, you would use specifically tuna skin for the purpose. So all that, also mechusar kan. Also, for example, if the kavi is still missing its Rabbeinu Gershon actually brings a point. Also, another meaning of tuna. Rabbeinu Gershon says, is it something with which you paint the thing red? So whatever it is, the point is that either way, you plan to do something else with this wooden keli. You didn't plan to leave it as is. Also, mechusar kan. Also, if the keli is missing a base, or it's missing its lip, or it's missing its rim around the lip, or it's missing the handle. So all of those, tomei, so therefore the keli is still able to be makabel truma, because it's functional at this point, even though it's missing one or another of these things. Mechusar chatita, on the other hand, if it's still lacking, that it still has to actually be, the inside of it has to be carved out, tahor, then it's tahor, it's not makabel truma, because you haven't made it into a kli kibul yet. So you want to ask, what do we need that point? Obviously, if you haven't carved it out, of course it's not makabel truma. It's still a flat keli, and it's not even a keli at all. And the answer is loy tzricha b'chok kapiza b'kapa. The chiddush is of the b'risa. Let's say, for example, he has a piece of wood that he plans to make a calf measure out of it, and he starts carving it out, and he has only reached the point of kapiza, which is 3/4 of a calf. So he's three quarters. So he's carving out the inside of it, but he's only done three quarters of the carving. So even though it is functional now as a papiza, but he plans to make it into a cab, so therefore we can say the malacha is not completed yet. Once he reaches the point where it will hold a cab, then as we said, even if it's not polished or even if it's not polished or decorated, etc., then it'll still be mekabel terumah. But that's what the b'raisa means. Mefusa chatita. We don't mean you didn't start carving it out at all. We meant you haven't finished carving the full depth of it that you planned to. Okay, so that's gomei kleitz, and again we're saying that those are mekabel terumah. Next, the b'raisa continues. The eloin gomei kleimatzus. Now, what's the definition of gomei kleimatzus, of unfinished metal kelim? As similarly, kosher also loshuf. He plans to sand it down or sand or whatever to rub it down to make it smooth. L'shabet. So again, like we said before, he's going to put metal frames, little metal squares on it to make it nice or whatever. L'garer. Or he's going to smooth it. Rashi points out loshuf and legara basically are the same kind of thing. The difference is that loshuf would be more relevant as far as iron kalim. Legara would be the term that you would use for gold or silver kalim. I guess the difference is loshuf would be more like to sand them or something, to sandblast them or something, let's say, to make them smooth. Whereas gold and silver, instead, you would use the term to polish them. So the charker, or if he plans to make decorations in it, again, he's going to engrave into the surface decorations on this metal keli. Yeah, for example, consider the decorations that they had, for example, on the menorah, the meshukodim, where it was made with an ammon-like design. So that kind of thing is called the charker. On the side of it here, it says the oro chazagir, so the charkev, or the charkein, whatever. Okay. Anyway, lahakish for kurnus, or he still plans to bang it with a hammer because it's dented in some places, and he's going to bang it with a hammer to get rid of dents. Mechusar kan, or if it's missing its base, oigen, or it's missing its decorative rim, oigen, or its handle, all of those, that's a metal keli tahor, then it's tahor, it's not makabel terumah, because, again, it still has to be made, not just that it's functional, but also that it's decorative. But if it's only missing its lid, then it's makabel terumah, because the lid is not considered part of the actual keli itself. The lid, in effect, is considered another keli, and you still have the keli is nice enough without its lid. This connection, you have the famous story involving the Alter Rebbe, that one time somebody gave him, I think, a snuff box or something like that, and he didn't want to use it for snuff. He said, why should I start taking on the taiva of sniffing snuff? But instead, he took the cover of it. So the original version of the story was he broke off the cover, which is shiny metal, to use it for a tefillin mirror. And then there's a famous thing, they said, told it over, I think, to the Tzemach Tzedek, and the Tzemach Tzedek said, the Alter Rebbe didn't break anything, there was a chutz mechaber, there was a metal thread or a metal screw or something that was holding the base and the cover together, and he removed that screw or whatever that thing, and used the lid by itself. But we see, in other words, the rest of it was still a functional keli, even without the lid. Okay, so the Gemara asks, Maishnohani or Maishnohani, what's the difference between... What is, after all, the difference between the metal kalim and the wooden kalim? So again, the question is not as far as flat versus not flat. That we learned before, the fact that wooden kalim are compared to a sack and metal kalim are not. The question is, this whole business that we said about wooden kalim, it doesn't matter if they're beautiful as long as they're functional, whereas metal kalim has to be beautiful, has to be, their designing has to be finished. What's the difference? So the answer is, Rabbi Yechanan Omam Tolu Kovid Asurin. So Rabbi Yechanan says, because metal kalim are made for covering. You have metal kalim, in other words, you have them in your house for covered. Now, Rabbi Negeshim actually says that it means that they're made for covered. They're not even really made to be. To be functional. So in other words, you're not actually using them for anything. Just for covering. On the other hand, many mafoshim explain. Of course, you use them, but the point is, you're using them because you want to look nice in front of orchim and things like that. You don't want to use your wooden kalim for orchim. You want to use your nice metal kalim. In a similar vein, now, for example, halacha on the Seder night, you're supposed to use all your nicest kalim and bring them out and put them on the table, even if you're not going to use them, just to show that we're bnei chorin. It's brought about Ma'aril, for example, Ma'aril, one of the famous late rishonim, that one of his jobs, one of the ways he earned money was he lent money to goyim at interest, which was a common thing for Jews to do in those days. And sometimes they would give them a mashkin, gold or silver kalim that they had until they could pay back the debt. Pesach night, he would take out those kalim that were by him as a mashkin and put them on his table, even though they don't actually belong to him, but nevertheless, they're in his rishus, and he would put them on the table to decorate the table, lekavod Pesach, lekavod the Seder. So therefore, so some metal kalim are made lekavod, they're made to look nice in front of the guests and things like that, and therefore you want them to look their best. But Rab Nachman says because they're very expensive. So in other words, you want to get full price for a keli, it wouldn't be considered the keli until the entire design of it is finished, and then you can sell it at the price that you had in mind for such a metal keli. So the Gemara says, "My binai, who? What's the practical difference between Rabbi Yochanan's and Rabbi Nachman's explanations?" And the answer is, "Ikaminai klei etzem." The nachkaminim between them would be about kalim that are made of bone. They're also expensive, but they're not so much recovered. So now, according to Rabbi Yochanan, since the key thing is that they're made for covered, therefore they would be considered like according to Rabbi Yochanan, Hoyolo covered Asurim, such things, clay etzem, are not made recovered. So according to Rabbi Yochanan, they would be considered like wooden kalim, and therefore they're makabel truma, even if they don't have all their designs and decorations and all that. Rav Nachman would say that they're not makabel truma because until they're finished, because he would consider them like clay metals. And in fact, Rav Nachman is going to his svarim that Rav Nachman clayets and clay matzos gamul, as in fact Rav Nachman says that bone, that kalim made out of bone, are considered like metal kalim, and therefore they're not makabel truma until their design is finished. Now, Rishonim point out, and Ramban, the Rashba point out, there is still a way in which clay etzem are in fact like wooden kalim, namely, as we're going to go on to point out in the Gemara over here, the fact that we learn that bone kalim are able to be makabel truma in the first place, we learn from a pasuk, and they're compared in that pasuk to wooden kalim, and therefore they would have to do the wooden kalim, that flat ones are not makabel truma. So in other words, according to Rav Nachman, bone kalim would be sort of in between, would be considered sort of in between metal and wood. On the one hand, they're not makabel truma if they're flat, like wooden kalim, but on the other hand, they would not be makabel truma unless they're finished like metal kalim. So the Gemara says, "Mekwal de clay, that's makabel truma." Okay, well, the implication of Rav Nachman is saying that bone kalim are considered like metal kalim, and that implies that bone kalim are able to be makabel truma. So where do we have a pasuk to tell us such a thing? So the answer is Ain. In fact, yes, there is in fact a pasuk that tells us that. The Tanya, Rabbi Shmuel ben Yochanan, Yechon ben Berakhah, Ma Tamad Loimah. What does it mean? A pasuk, the pasuk described when the Jewish people came back with spoils from the war of Midian in Parshas Matos. So the Torah says that Moshe tells them that many of these things are going to be tomei from Tomas Nest, and therefore you have to sprinkle them with Porah Druma water and toil them. And then instead of the expression, he mentions beged, the clothing, and he says the whole beged, the whole kli'er, any kalim made out of leather, the whole masse izin, anything made from goats, the whole kli'eitz, and any wooden kalim, tishato, you have to cleanse them, you have to purify them from tumas nes. So we have, so what does it mean? The whole masse izin. The lahavi davar abamin izin, this comes to include kalim that are made from things made out of goats. Now, skin of a goat we already have, that the pasuk mentions, which is leather. So it means it means anything that you make from the horns or from the hooves of the animal, those would also be makabel truma. Then the Braisa continues, Shar be'em of chayim inayim. How do we know the same thing is true of things that come from other kinds of animals as well? And the answer is Tamadam of a whole master. Therefore, the pasuk is any work of these things. So that comes to include other types of animals as well. Choices deals with the point that there's a different Gemara that says that we can learn in a different way. But Tosfa says from Bechol, you could learn, for example, different kinds of animals all have the same kind of bones. But let's say, for example, hair is different, and therefore you need a different limud for that, that you have in a different Gemara. So the whole Masse comes to include all the Behemoth B'chayim. Im Kein Matam Alamit Isim. Well, then, what does the Pasuk mean when it mentions specifically goats? And the answer is Prat B'Oifus, as opposed to birds. Kevim that are made from bones or from bones or claws or whatever, those birds are not Makabal feathers, are not Makabal Trum. But we see from that things that are made from the horns or the hooves, or also the bones of the animal, are macabre trauma. So from there we see that bone kalim are in fact macabre trauma. On the other hand, birds not, there's a mission in kalim that mentions there are certain rare exceptions, there's certain kinds of things. For example, you take an ostrich egg and make a kalim out of it. The egg, the shell of an ostrich egg is so tough that it kind of resembles clay cheres, and therefore a person makes a kalim from it, it would be macabre trauma. The Rambam actually writes that would only be midirabanan, even that. But midiraisa, nothing made from birds or fish for that matter is macabre trauma. Okay. Next, the Mishnah continues. Here's another Mishnah as far as this, what applies to this does not apply to that, and vice versa. The Mishnah says, when there's bitter almonds, there's a type of almonds that when they're little are sweet and good to eat, but then when they get older, they become bitter. What actually happens? Bitterness actually comes. They develop a chemical in them, which is chemically related to cyanide. In fact, a person eats too many of those bitter almonds, and they could be poisonous. But a few of them is fine. And so you have them, but nevertheless, people don't usually eat the bitter ones precisely for that reason, because they're potentially poisonous. So now you have these almonds. When they're little, then they're that one type. That when they're little, they're good to eat. But then when they become older, then when they become more mature, they become bitter. So then, achayev shkedim amorim potter b'masukin. So the stage of their growth, when they would be chayev and meisim, namely when they're little, and when you can eat them, potter b'masukin, that same stage would be potter by the regular sweet ones, because the regular sweet ones are usually, which are the regular sweet ones also contain this chemical, but a lot less of it, which is why they're safe to eat. For that matter, roasted almonds is good no matter what. That's why it's common to roast almonds, because no matter what, even if they're the bitter type, that gets rid of the cyanide. But anyway, the point is the sweet ones are not usually eaten when they're little before they're mature. So therefore, so if a person were to pick the sweet kind, the regular kind, and eat them when he's little, he'd be potter from meisim. But at the same, the bitter ones, if he picked them at the same stage, would be chayev, because that's a normal stage where you eat it. Chayev masukin, potter b'morim, and vice versa, the sweet ones, where a person is chayev to take meisim from them when they're mature, which is the normal stage to eat them, would be potter by the bitter ones, because that's not the normal, because that's not normally you, that's not normally when you eat them. So the Gemara says, "Tana Rabbanan, Shkedim Amorim." So we learn in a Braisa that expands on our Mishnah. The bitter almonds, Katanim Chayovim. When they're little, they're Chayev, because then the point is something is Chayev and Meiser only when it reaches a stage called Gmar Pri, where the produce is finished its development. When it comes to these Shkedim Amorim, we consider its development is finished for purposes of eating when they're little, because you don't usually eat them when they're mature. So chanim chayavim. So if you pick them when they're little, then they would be chayav and nice. Gedolim p'turim. But if they're mature, if they're fully ripe, then they would be potter, because then at that point again they have this cyanide like stuff in them, and you can't eat them. Mesukin, the sweet ones, gedolim chayavim, chanim p'turim. The mature ones, the fully ripe ones are chayav. The small ones are potter. So that comes out in other words what we said in the Mishnah. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi, Omer Mishum Aviv, Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi says in the name of his father, Rabbi Yosi, that no, actually, Zevazel Lifter, both of them are potter when they're immature. The sweet ones, because they're not finished developing yet, and even the bitter ones, because they're not considered a peri yet, they're not considered a fruit, because they're not ripe. So according to him, in other words, they would be So according to him, we would be saying that both of them would be potter, the small ones, whether they're the sweet or the bitter ones. That's according to Rashi. We'll talk about it in a second. According to Tosfos, explains differently. But Amrilah, others say that actually what Rabbi Shmuel ben Rabbi Yosi said, Zevazelachiyu, that both of them are actually chayav in Isis. Again, according to Rashi, meaning the mature ones, whether they're bitter or whether they're sweet, You could still eat them, and therefore, as well as I think Moe is going to explain soon, what would you do? What would you do with the bitter ones? So therefore, some Rabbi, so was according to the second version, Rabbi Shmuel, but Rabbi Yossi would be saying in his father's name that both of them are actually chayim. That's the point of Rashi. So according to Rashi, Zevazel the Pater in the first version means that all of them are potter when they're unripe, and the second one, Zevazel the Chiyuv, would be both of them are chayiv when they're ripe. Tosfos says no, Zevazel the Pater means the bitter ones are potter regardless. When they're immature, they're not yet a completed fruit, and when they're mature, then they're too bitter to eat. Ba'amilah Zevazel the Chiyuv, others say that both of them would be chayiv. Both kinds of bitter almonds would be chayav, the mature ones, because they are mature, they're completely ripe, and the small ones, because they're immature ones, because they're better to eat. So again, according to Rashi, in other words, the point is, we're saying zevazeh versus zevazeh means the small ones of all kinds, and the big ones of all kinds. According to Tosfos, the zevazeh refers to both kinds of bitters. So the Gemara says, "Amar Abila, Horlor of Hordam, Chaminim Petzipori, Kedivra Oyma Zevazel Lefterim." So says Rabila, Rab Chaminim gave a practical psak din in Sipori, following the opinion that either kind of potter, according to Rashi, all small ones, and according to Tosfos, all bitter ones. That all of them in practice would be potter. Well, the Gemara asks, well, the version that had said both of them would be lechiyuv, if you have the bitter ones and they're mature, what would you use them for? We just said before, they're poisonous and you can't eat them. Because you can sweeten them by roasting them, like we said before, roasted almonds, it breaks down the chemical, whatever the name of the chemical is, that's the precursor of cyanide, and therefore they're safe to eat. Therefore, according to that way of looking at it, they should be chayav, because the fact is you can eat them as long as you roast them first. But again, Rabbi Yochanan had passed them in practice that zev is a lepter, and that's how the halacha is. That's how the halacha is brought. That bitter almonds are potter from meiser regardless. Okay.